CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. We are live on a Tuesday. Oh, it's chilly. But what do you expect for the end of June? And with me is none other than Mash, who you met last week, who is back by popular demand. People liked hearing from you, dude. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. I'm glad people liked hearing from me.
Yeah, you were very entertaining last week, actually.
I was actually nervous, so I'm glad that people actually liked me.
No, you were terrific. Listen, you came in here, you're confident. You know, we found some good people over the last couple of months, because the hardest thing to do on this show is to just get on there and be yourself and, like, have something to say and have something valuable to add, have a bit of a sense of humor about yourself, not take it too seriously. You've done all of that stuff. Well done. Sounding good.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. So we want to hear from you this morning in the comments. You can let us know what you're up to. Just drop us a YouTube comment. Or if you'd like, you can also get hold of us on email, contact@cliffcentral.com, especially if you're listening. You know, a lot of people aren't listening live, so you'll be listening at some other point through the course of the day today. And you want to give us some feedback. So we want to hear from you. Let us know what you're up to. All right. So a couple of things to get to this morning. Lebung is meant to be with us, but I'm thinking Lebung is probably going ahead with this morning. She says, I've got cramps, plus I don't want to have to push during the show, lol. So it could be happening today even. She could be...
Finally!
Yeah, she could be giving birth today. But the weirdest thing about this Lebung, right? She is such a nutcase that she is also moving house. She is moving on Friday. Now, this is while she's heavily pregnant. She may even give birth this week, but she's moving house. You know, I don't know if you know this, Mash, but there are a couple of things in life which are considered the most stressful things that people can do. One of them is moving house. Another one for many people is speaking in front of a crowd, although that's not a problem for all of us. Otherwise, the show wouldn't go ahead every day. Another one is divorce. And another one is obviously death, you know, death in the family. So when someone in the family dies, it can be tremendously stressful, obviously, especially if it's someone you really loved, someone very close to you. So Lebung is dealing with birth, which I reckon would come in at number five if it went that far, if the list went beyond four. Birth would be number five because it is stressful and there's a whole new person who comes into the world. But she's also chosen to do the other one, which is moving house in the same week. Ooh. Which is crazy. I mean, talk about loading yourself up with a whole lot of stress.
Moving house is so hectic. I just did it recently, so I know the stress of it all. And to a certain extent, I do understand where Lebung is coming from, because you do want to move before the baby arrives. Because the baby's here, you can't be lifting boxes and breastfeeding at the same time.
No, definitely. It's you shouldn't be lifting boxes at all at this point. I mean, it's just unbelievable, you know.
Absolutely.
It's asking for like a lot of stress. We want to hear from you this morning. So a couple of comments coming through. A lot of people just being rude to each other here. there's you know, the comments section is just full of people who go at each other the whole time. And it's boring because
they just attack each other the whole time. That's all I ever see.
I mean, look here, for example. Tabo says, which people? I know enough people from Tlaho. And then Tlaho replies and says, Tabo Pali, I wish your parents never made you, idiot. You know, this is the kind of warm welcome that you get early in the morning on the show. So Tabo does say he just bought a house and I have to move soon. It's giving me so much anxiety because everything is moving so slowly with the municipality and lawyers. Well, I did a couple of things yesterday. I had a very productive day, which I'm pleased about because I've been feeling like I haven't been doing enough at the moment. And I had quite a lot of work, so I finished most of that in the morning. I got it done by like 11:30, 12-ish. And then I decided, screw this, I'm going to sort out the house and I'm going to sort out the kitchen and I'm going to sort out the pantry and I'm going to sort out my bathroom and all of that stuff. So I got it super organized. I bought like these containers and everything is, you know, It's perfectly, it's just everything is sorted into exactly the places it's meant to be. So now I can go in there and there's no mess. There's no like open packets of pasta with some of the pasta falling out kind of shit. There's no empty boxes or expired stuff or any of that stuff. I did it all in terms of tidying out the pantry, the kitchen, the fridge, all the different cupboards. I've also cleared out a whole bunch of stuff I don't need anymore. So now it is a well-run operation. Everything that I need is there. Nothing that I don't need. I love being organized. It's my favorite thing.
Wow, Gareth, you're the only person I know who actually reorders their pantry because, you know, first of all, I didn't know spices expire, number one.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that spices expire.
Yeah.
So we've had spices that expired in like 2012 and we're still using those same spices because some spices are just so, I want to say rare, but they're the kind of spices you don't use every day, you know, like your thyme. You don't use thyme every day. You know, basil. I don't use basil every day. I'm sure people out there
oregano.
Do, but I don't. So I still have some of the same basil from like 12 years ago.
I didn't realize that they expired either, but you'll find out very quickly when you use it and it doesn't even taste of anything. It's like, it's just gone. It's tasteless. It just becomes, because they dry them out, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's just soil.
So Congo Chris says, I bet Gareth has a small Tupperware for his open tube of toothpaste. You know, I met someone the other day who he doesn't like a wet toothbrush. Now, this is so bizarre because obviously when you put it in your mouth, it's going to get wet anyway, right? He has eight different toothbrushes, which he uses on like a circuit, rotation, and he will use the driest one every time, and then he'll let them dry out over the period of like the next 8 or 9 days, however many toothbrushes he has. People are weird. They have their thing. So if you think, I don't put my open toothpaste in a small Tupperware, but if I did, it wouldn't be the weirdest thing I've heard this week.
Wait, so his toothbrushes take 8 days to dry?
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose
7-8 days.
He doesn't want to take want to take a chance, but that's his thing. He doesn't like putting a wet toothbrush. He says it's disgusting. I don't know why.
I thought you just shake it and it's dry.
Well, I don't let mine dry. Don't look at me like I'm the freak or the crackpot. I don't have this rule. I have one toothbrush, and only when it's really looking terrible do I throw it out and get a new one, because they're also expensive. So you get those electric toothbrushes with the different heads, right? Those are the ones we're supposed to use. But I just use a handheld one. And it's, you know, just the normal manual toothbrush. But apparently once the color starts to fade on the bristles, you've got to throw it out and get a new one. I usually go a little bit longer than that, which I know dentists say it's a terrible idea and you shouldn't do that. But this guy, eight, maybe nine toothbrushes. I think that's what he said. And he doesn't like it when they're wet. So I don't know how that works. I do this one thing which every probably 2 weeks, I take the toothbrush and I do put it in a little bit of hydrogen peroxide just to make sure that it's nice and clean. Because you think about it, it's pretty gross. You put it in your mouth when you wake up in the morning when your mouth is like not the greatest. And then, you know, you brush your teeth again late at night and then the thing lies there in the air. It's like in the bathroom air, which is even worse. So every 2 weeks, I'll just take a little bit of hydrogen peroxide, and you just let it burn off any of that gross shit that might have gathered on it. And then it feels like a brand new toothbrush. So there we go. There's something you didn't think you'd find out this morning.
Yeah, I learn something new every day. Now I need to learn where to find hydrogen peroxide.
You get it at the chemist. They all have it.
Oh, you can get it at the chemist.
Yeah. Just be careful. Don't get it on your fingers, because it will turn them white, like ghostly paper white. Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, especially
I'm not going to get it there.
Especially if it's very strong. But it's a very useful disinfectant, hydrogen peroxide. And it breaks down into water.
Oh, and I see here.
Water and oxygen.
Yeah. And I see here that Nico here says that you're supposed to replace your toothbrush every 3 months.
Yeah, I believe so. That's what they say, right? Somewhere around there. But I mean, some people brush very, very hard. Some people, I mean, I don't know what this is. We need a dentist to help us figure this out, right? Bernice has.
Yes, because I remember
Bernice has two toothbrushes. One for the morning, one for the evenings. How do you like that?
Okay, that's really cool. But then also it gives you double the work when it comes to replacing them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Oh. And then it's to replace two. But maybe they last longer because you only use them once a day as opposed to twice. You know, like it's maybe the 3 months.
Yeah,
so in other words, she can have two toothbrushes over 6 months, which is the same as one every 3 months, I suppose.
That sounds good, yeah. How frequently do you replace your toothbrushes, Gareth?
Probably around 3 months. It's probably around there as well. But they start looking like they need replacing after about 2.5. So, but I usually wait until 3. I'm not like such a pain in the backside about that. I have two, says Boiled Prawn Shack, one for travel and one for home. Yeah. Mm. Keenan also says, I'm a hard brusher. I change every 3 months. Yeah. You?
Oh, yeah. So I replace my toothbrushes about once a year, but I can explain why. Main reason being I have multiple toothbrushes. I actually have like a bowl with toothbrushes in my bathroom. So I just pick. I just close my eyes and just pick one every day.
Why do you have so many? I never know
which one is the... It's because mostly because my mom, whenever I go home, every time I'm about to leave, she's like, yeah, touch your toothbrush. Every single time I go home. So if I go home this month and next month, I'm going to get some more toothbrushes.
Oh, okay.
So I just open them, throw them in the bowl, and I just close my eyes and pick one every single day.
Well, that's good. Then she's paying for your toothbrushes. That's a win. I don't see a problem with that.
Yeah.
Mm,
yeah.
Nice one.
Sponsored toothbrushes. So that's very convenient. But now I don't know how old each one is. So... depending on the fading, the color fading of the blue, that's how I will determine. But yeah, I've had that bowl for like a year now.
Well, let us talk about something that everybody's going to be dealing with. I mean, I don't know if you've filled up your car lately. I don't know if you know how horrible it is to see the price when you go and you fill up. And even if you don't fill up, you just say, oh, just give me, you know, like 400 Rand or whatever. And 400 Rand used to be quite a lot. You used to get at least half a tank out of 400 Rand. Not anymore. It's hugely expensive. Now, analysts have said, and they were saying this yesterday in a TV news thing that I saw, I think you saw it as well, that petrol could reach 40 Rand a litre at current rates. Could keep going up and up and up. I'm sorry. We're at what, 20? How much? 25? How much are we at a litre at the moment?
We're approaching 30 Rand. Yes, okay, just over 25 Rand.
Yeah, so... I don't know what we're going to do. We need some alternatives here as to what we can do once petrol reaches those prices. Let's hope it doesn't, but the analysts, you know, these experts say, so we should have a plan B. What do we do besides walk?
We should. Well, first of all, not everybody wants to use public transport. Hmm. So let's eliminate that for starters, because also public transport is also affected by the price of petrol.
Of course.
And... mostly because, I mean, if price goes up of petrol, taxis go up by 5 Rand, by 2 Rand. So you're still paying for petrol, technically.
Yeah.
So I think alternatives would be to actually completely remove petrol from your life. So any devices that use petrol, gone. So first thing we could possibly do, I think, is walking. Could walk everywhere or run everywhere.
Okay. Going to be a little bit difficult for some people who are like a long way from work.
Yeah, and then I'm thinking the second thing we could possibly do is, okay, maybe stay at home. You know, stay at home a bit more, try not to go out as much.
Absolutely.
But also you still need a mode of transport.
Sure.
So I think horse and buggy, number one.
Oh, wow.
Horse and buggy is something that we should actually bring back. Amish have been doing it. Let's all just go Amish.
I think we talked about this just the other day on the show. It's like a horse is going to cost you a whole lot less than a car, and you just have to have a place to stable it, and then you need all the food for the horse. It's not going to be cheap, but it'll be probably a bit more price reasonable. Are you allowed to ride a horse on the roads in South Africa?
I am not too sure about that. I don't think so, actually.
I'm not sure.
Because I've never seen a horse on K53s and stuff like that.
No, I haven't either. And I'm fairly sure that if a horse went past you on the highway, first of all, the horse would be freaked out by all the traffic. Second of all, I think all the people in their cars would be freaked out by the horse. So I don't know that that's a good idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Bronwyn says, how about electric?
Another alternative.
Electric bicycles, she says, is a
bicycle.
Good idea. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That was actually up next, yeah, that I was actually thinking of. So electric bicycles are a good alternative. First reason being not too much electricity usage. And you can, on most electric bicycles, also pedal. So you can actually pedal. And if the battery runs out, of course. So you do have the alternative of actually using your manual power or electricity, and charging it is not crazy like an electric car. But we can also try out electric scooters too. That's also a good alternative. And I think in terms of electric cars, most of them are really expensive. So they're not quite justifiable in this country, especially with load shedding.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually one electric car that I found on the internet, which I think could actually be our savior in this country. It's called the Alexa City Bike. You should see this thing, Gareth. It is so tiny. It is so cute. It's the cutest little car I've ever seen. It's a small little four-seater, and it has two doors. It's adorable. It is so cute. It is so small. I know some people are going to laugh at it, but it is a very cute car. It weighs less than a ton.
I'm just going to look this up.
E-L-E-K-S-A.
All right, let me just find a picture of this for everybody. Hey, listen, at this point, I don't even care what it looks like. As long as it gets you from where you want to go to where you want to go without having to pay for petrol, that's a big win. I mentioned that yesterday I was going to have someone come around so that they could look at solar here, just so that I could have lights, you know, when the lights go out, because God knows, aren't we sick of that shit? And the guy was like, well, you know what, if you're not running your geezers and you're not running, you know, during load shedding now I'm talking about, because it's not like I'm going to be putting electricity back into the grid, but during load shedding, you can probably do this stuff and it's sustainable. It's like you can, while the power's out, you can do all of this, you know. It's not gonna bankrupt you. You can keep the lights on, and then you'll be able to have electricity while everybody else is sitting in the dark. And that's the worst part, especially winter. I don't know if you agree with me, but like in winter you do not want to be lying there in the freezing cold, which is bad enough, even if you've got a blanket on you, and it's also pitch dark, and you're like stumbling around and bumping into things. It's not a good idea. Here's the Alexa, by the way.
It's not.
That's the Alexa City Bug.
It is adorable.
You say it's a four-seater. It looks to me like it can barely take two people. Is that really a four-seater?
Yes, two adults and two newborn babies. At the back.
Yeah, there's the terms. Two newborn babies is the terms and conditions. Hey, listen, that thing looks like it could be quite sensible. I mean, once petrol goes up to above 30 rand a litre, which we really hope it doesn't, but it could, then you don't have an option. You got to drive whatever you can afford, and this thing looks like it might be a better option. It doesn't look like it uses a lot of power.
Yeah.
You could probably charge it overnight. Can go easily, 40, 60, 80, maybe 100 kilometres before you need to recharge it again. Then when you get to wherever you're going, you charge it on that side and go home.
Yeah, its top speed is 55 kilometers an hour.
Right.
So not too sensible for the highway, but its range is up to 100 kilometers. So just perfect for a little running around in the city.
See, it's like a golf cart. And I don't mind if I look stupid in a car like that. I've driven a lot of bizarre cars in my life, and if it's fuel efficient, I'm all for it. There used to be a time where I gave a shit and I would like be, oh no, I want to drive something that looks cool. I mean, I had sports cars when I was younger and all of that shit. No more of that. No more of that wasted time and money. Sorry, going straight for these things. So there it is, the City Bug.
Absolutely.
The Alexa City Bug. Listen, this is especially a good option if you are in town and you live in town and you don't have far to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just go to the shops and things like that, like I did yesterday, then it's totally doable, right?
It's totally doable.
Yeah.
It makes life so much more convenient, so easy. And it's lightweight. It's so small. I see somebody here commented, who's this? Congo Chris said you can park it in your pocket.
Sven says, the electric car is good for you, GC. With your solar panels, you can charge your electric car. Yeah. Well, I'll let you know. I'll keep you informed how that whole process goes. Tlatlego says, I ran around Kyalami horse stable on the weekend. Listen, I love those tall-legged animals, but apparently it's expensive to keep and maintain. And also drivers around here are so friendly. Well, someone pointed out the other problem with a horse is that they're going to there's going to be horse shit all over our roads again for the first time since like the turn of the century, the 1900s. And you can't drink and horse, according to Sebastian. That's a good point. Apparently, e-bikes are very cool, but also not very cheap. And Rebellious Ruth is backing the taxis. Mm-hmm. She says they will be our savior. Hope the taxis cause havoc as they rule the country anyway. Yeah. And Luzon says, I'm getting a Vespa, I swear. Well, what's fuel consumption on those like? Because maybe that's also a good option. You know, you get these bikes that are, they're not super bikes. They're not the really fast ones. They're not the the ones that that can race. They're just these low-level ones, these low-grade ones. I'm sure you can get one of those cheap too. And then you just have to be very careful with choosing the right route. Look, a lot of people are saying stop complaining. Like, for example, Carl says, just shut up, pay for fuel. There's fuck all you can do. Stop dreaming. All right, well, you've given up before you even started.
Absolutely. I mean, the world is all about alternatives. There is something we can do. We just have to find it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would get an IX if I had the money, says K-Star M. Oh, yeah, listen. Mm-hmm. That is a hell of a nice car. I mean, if you haven't listened to our podcast series that we did with BMW, you can find it on cliffcentral.com. And we actually did a whole review of the iX, which is really, really good. You can go and listen to the guys reviewing it. Yeah, it's a superb. But that is expensive. However, once you've got it, I suppose what you lose on the swings, you gain on the roundabouts. So you can probably justify it. To the tax man, you can justify it to yourself, you can justify it to your partner. If you have the cash, then maybe it's not a bad idea to go fully electric. Electric cars are silent death for playing children. Ooh, that's a scary thought. Yeah, but playing children shouldn't be in the street. And it's the driver who has
that's
to look
true.
After
that.
That's
true, riding the streets to begin with.
Right. Derek is being very practical. Derek says the solution is to not let the government determine the price of petrol. A large percentage of our price includes bullshit taxes, e.g. the bankrupt and poorly managed road accident fund, which is true. And Keenan says, it looks like we are on our way back into the Voortrekker days. Yeah, I'm afraid so, you know, history repeating itself. Anyway, I wanted
just
to
have to accept it.
I wanted to talk about this quickly. You went on two dates with somebody, and then after just two dates, they asked you to move in with them. Holy shit. You must be the most charming date in the world. Two dates, and they're like, come, move in with me.
I like to think I am. Well,
that's impressive.
So this person I met this person 2 weeks ago. Started talking 2 weeks ago, and just two dates in. So first of all, first date was at this person's house, which already freaked me out because who just lets a stranger come to their house? I'm still a stranger at that point. You haven't met me.
Well, I mean, maybe you don't maybe you don't seem like a serial killer. Maybe they, you know, you're a trustworthy seeming person and they're willing to take a chance. Give yourself some credit.
Yeah. It's very concerning. So now, after just two dates, this person's like, yo, come move in, come live with me, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, hey, I'm not too sure. I am considering it, though. I know it sounds crazy. I am actually considering
you're
it.
As insane as
because
he
I think
is,
life is all about taking a risk.
Well,
life is all about taking that leap.
I'm going to guess then that you're as crazy as they are because you're actually thinking about it. No, look, I mean, I'm all for taking a chance and all the rest, but just like you say, oh, well, what kind of person invites someone to their house the first date? But you're actually considering it?
I am, because I just think that, you know, sometimes, well, who can I use as an example? I've seen couples who actually dated for like 2 months, 4 months, and they've been married for 25 years. I've heard stories like that.
Is this stuff you've seen on TV? Because I don't believe that that happens very often. And usually, I mean, listen to all these people. They're like, oh my God, Snae says, don't do it, in all in caps. Congo Chris says, it's a trap mash. Run. This conversation reminds me of Sia, says somebody. Beware of the bunny boiler, says Seamus. Carl says, it sounds like a crazy person. There's not one person is saying this is a good idea. Not one.
But I am heavily considering it still. Because I went to this person's space, I did see how they live. They're very clean, like incredible, like clinically clean, actually. Clinically clean. Mm-hmm. And I was very impressed by that. For me, honestly, my bar is very low. You know, living with someone who can't cook and all that, my bar is very low. So, I mean, just be able to cook and just be clean, and I'm really jumping in with you.
Well, I mean, also, what if it goes wrong? You've only been on two dates, so by maybe the fourth date, it's not working out so well, then you're suddenly homeless. So
what I'm thinking of rather doing is maybe spending maybe a weekend.
That's a good start. I mean, again, people are saying, Amber Alert, Amber Alert, says K-Star. You're being swindled. Don't do it, says Tatlejo. This is amazing. Someone says here, don't do it. You'll end up like a leather lampshade. And Dogozo wants to know, are they rich?
They are.
Oh.
Hence, I'm considering it. A very big deciding factor. I'll be down by the horse stables.
Aneska says,
hence, I was considering horses this morning as a mode of transport.
Okay, I see what's going on here. You found someone with lots of money. Aneska says, just try a weekend first and see how it goes. Ooh, okay. Listen.
Yeah, baby steps. I'll just give it baby steps. And if it works out, then I guess I'll be a lampshade. And if it doesn't, then I'll go back home.
Goldishek says, American Psycho also had a clean home. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bernice says, maybe just night. Have you spent a night there yet?
I haven't even spent a night yet.
Ooh, to baby steps, please. Return to the Wild, the only one who's prepared to go with this, says, do it, Mash. I want to hear the follow-up story at some stage. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure the story is going to be pretty good, pretty positive. It could even be marriage. You never know. I'm very optimistic.
You're
about
jumping
this.
Into this. Tabo says, it was nice knowing you. We will miss you. We'll leave it at that. Oh, my God. All right. So here are a couple of headlines for you this morning. There are a few stories in the news that you need to know about. First of all, Kendrick Lamar closed up at Glastonbury Festival with a powerful plea for women's rights. He said, while he had blood pouring down his face from a crown of thorns, I mean, this is the kind of drama that you have to do now in order to get noticed. He said, Godspeed for women's rights. They judge you. They judge Christ. He repeated the phrase over and over with increasing intensity, eventually breaking off mid-sentence and throwing his microphone to the ground before walking off stage. So a big theatrical, forceful performance. During the show, Lamar, who won a Pulitzer Prize for his 2017 album, Damn, addressed the themes of guilt, greed, loyalty, power, ambition, and prejudice, shouldering the audience's problems by examining his own. I like Kendrick Lamar, but as far as I'm concerned, this sounds like a real attention-seeking, hopping on the bandwagon. I suppose you have to do this if you're in music now, because these days, everyone's looking to be the most relevant. So whatever's going on in the news, you need to be allied. You have to have some part of the show that's allied to it. You need to have some part of the show that you could say, well, I am on top of these issues. I'm the guy who's really got my finger on the pulse. So that's what he's doing here. And I suppose good for him.
Yeah, and let's be honest. Nowadays, nobody's really dropping any I wouldn't say nobody's dropping any classic songs, but it's hard to be relevant. It's hard to be remembered. I mean, we live in such a fast-paced world. You're trending this week. Next week, nobody knows who you are.
Right.
It's hard to remain relevant. So you have to actually push it. I mean, he was wearing a crown with like about, is it 300 diamonds on it?
Okay, but it looked like thorns and the diamonds obviously.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's also, he's showing off at the same time as he's trying to be Jesus Christ. I don't know. If it works for you, it works for you. Jesus. I like Kendrick Lamar's music. I couldn't care less about his politics. That's how I feel. But I know these days everybody's hopping on every political bandwagon they can. I mean, Congo Chris mentions here, it started with Billy Joe from Green Day announcing his U.S. citizenship. He was renouncing, rather, his U.S. citizenship on the stage at Glastonbury, all because of the Roe versus Wade being overturned. So I don't know. Listen, I don't really need artists to be getting political on everything. We spoke about this just yesterday. Must everything be political? And I hope the answer is no.
Yes.
You know, sometimes you just want entertainment.
I always say this. Just sing. Yeah. Just sing and keep it moving. Just rap or keep it moving. Just act and keep it moving.
Right.
They don't need to shove their politics down our throats all the time.
Exactly. We're not really into you guys. So, you know, we don't care whether you believe in this or that. I think that it would be nice if some of these musicians just gave us great music. And not everything has to have this huge political message. Anyway, so that's what's going on at Glastonbury Festival. The health department, this is really disturbing. You know, there was that Enyo Benny Tavern tragedy, right? 21 children mysteriously died. Some are being treated in hospital for backache, tight chest, vomiting, headaches. Eastern Cape Health Department has completed the post-mortems on those who died. Now, the worst part of this, and I do not understand how this happens, you know we've got problems in this country, but the health department in the Eastern Cape has called on the families of 5 of the kids who died because they cannot even identify them, which means those parents and those families are not even missing those children. They don't even know they're dead. They haven't even pitched up in order to try and find them, to identify them, to see them. They are lying in the mortuary, those 5 kids, and nobody has claimed them. You know,
I saw on Twitter that one of the families actually basically stepped forward I saw this on social media and they were like they got worried on Sunday morning when their 14-year-old daughter didn't arrive home as she usually did on Sunday mornings after going out the whole weekend. That alone worried me.
14-year-old.
That really concerned me.
I mean, you know,
because I was just like, how is it normal for your 14-year-old daughter to be out the whole weekend? How are you not worried? How is that just the normal weekend routine?
Yeah, we've got to stop pretending that we are that we're all the same in South Africa and that everybody cares about their kids and they want to raise them properly and they, you know, they want to do the right thing and they give a shit about like protecting children from terrible things. And clearly, there are some parents who do not care at all. And maybe a lot of these parents just aren't in their children's lives. Maybe they are estranged from their kids. Maybe they have died. Maybe they are, you know, maybe these kids have had to raise themselves. Either way, this is a major problem. Major, major problem. 5 of these children have not even been claimed by the families. So let's just stop pretending that we live in a country where everybody has the same amount of compassion. Everybody has the same sense of duty and responsibility. Clearly, they do not. There are a lot of parents who could give a damn about their kids. They still don't know they're missing 3 days after this tragedy in Buffalo City in East London. I mean, it's outrageous. You can't call yourself civilized and you can't claim human rights if you don't even know 3-4 days later whether your child is alive or dead. And you haven't even bothered to go and claim the body from the local mortuary. I mean, that is just unbelievable. Can you imagine, like, after day one, most parents would be like, oh, my God, where are my kids? Like you were saying, that family who realized their 14-year-old daughter was missing on the Sunday morning after this whole thing had happened on the Saturday. Then you look at the family who, by the Sunday night, are still not interested. They're still not worried. By the Monday morning, they're still not worried.
They just watch. Yeah.
Today is Tuesday.
Sure. I wonder what's going through their minds.
Well, if anything.
Yeah, today's Tuesday. I wonder what's going through.
If anything, what if they just don't give a shit, you know? I mean, what if they don't give a shit?
Could be the case.
In which case, do we really have to pretend that all people in this country are equally like caring for their own kids? No, clearly not. A lot of parents could give a shit about their own children. And that should make all of us very, very nervous. I mean, I remember when we were kids, we would go and play all day. As long as we were home by nighttime, everything was fine. But we didn't go out into the town. I mean, I grew up on a farm, so we would go and play on the farm. And we wouldn't go so far that we would lose ourselves or, you know, or not be able to find our way home or any of that stuff. But even if you grew up in the city, there's bound to be someone who sees you. Maybe someone who knows your mom or your dad or your aunt or your uncle or your granny or someone and goes, hey, shouldn't you be going home? 14-year-olds drinking at a tavern. There were some 13-year-olds drinking there too. This is not the way that people who are conscientious about their lives behave. Now, I know we've got problems with unemployment and, you know, there are lots of people who are desperately, desperately poor. But my God, if you have money for drinks at the tavern, I have to ask, the question about
at 13.
Yeah, how seriously are you going to take your life? What kind of a problem is that child going to be when they get to 18 or when they get to 25? I mean, Thabo says, these kids these days grow up in a different and complex world. I never thought I would be raising a daughter who knows what Wi-Fi is, let alone streaming. It's tough raising kids in these times. It is. It is. But really, you know, this is another point.
I think...
Tahleko says, guys, apparently the youngest was 13. How? I first tasted alcohol after writing my first matric paper, my last matric paper, at the Braai, which my dad picked me up from at 7 p.m. Well, there you see. Like you. Had
yes! I first tasted alcohol grade 11. Yeah. And it was literally just that, a taste.
Well, good for you. Then you... And Tahleko and Thabo obviously had good parents. That's what we're saying here. Sharon says kids aren't honest with their parents. They could have arranged sleepovers at a friend and got up to mischief. Yeah, and you'll get away with that once or twice. If your parents are really not paying attention, you'll get away with it over and over again.
Not every weekend.
Yeah. But you know, Eben says you assume that all of these kids have parents who are alive and who worry about them. Well, Eben, if you've made a child, if you brought a kid into the world and you don't, that is just such a damning thing. I will not have any respect for someone who brings a child into the world and then just stops looking after them around the age of what, in this case, could have been 5, 10, who knows. But 13-year-olds drinking at the tavern? Do me a favor. These parents should not be allowed to sue when the vampire lawyer appears out of the mist and says they can make money out of this. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Absolutely.
Either, there's no money there, so the lawyer's not going to come out of the mist. My kids were 18 years old and had to be home at 12, not a minute later. Mm-hmm. And we are still asking this question that Carl wants to know. How did they die? The media is making it seem like they died because they were underage. That's not how it works. What the hell happened? Yeah, it seems like it was poison or something like that, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation on Twitter, which I'm not going to get into.
Yeah.
But nobody knows at the moment. We're still trying to figure out.
Right. Well, I don't know what to make of this, but that's one of the headlines. We've got to move on to some other ones, even though it's a very disturbing story. Yeah. We could talk about it all morning. There's an online grocery store that is using tuk-tuks. You know those little things with the three wheels? To do grocery deliveries in KwaZulu-Natal, because it's cheaper, obviously, with petrol price coming all the way up. So South Africa's first rural...
Can I get that for myself?
Yeah, I suppose you can. You want to see what they look like? You want to see
yes,
what this
yes,
is?
Okay, please.
Let me show you. Let me show you a picture of one of these. They're those little things. They're horrible-looking things, but, I mean, if you... Who cares? Like we were saying for the electric car earlier, right? Who cares what it looks like? If it gets you what you need, that's what you want.
It gets you from point A to point B. That's all that matters at this point.
Right. So the other thing about this this car is that this delivery system is that it works in rural areas, which is really good news.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So it's basically like...
So it's a little tuk-tuk.
What service actually... Oh, so they just deliver groceries. What else do they deliver?
Okay, so let me tell you, they've got e-retail. So basically, grocery store, delivery service. They've navigated degraded roads and rough terrain to complete more than 25,000 orders already in KwaZulu-Natal. Online shopping and food delivery is part of the package there. Those have boomed. in the last 2 years, obviously buoyed by the pandemic. South Africa's brick and mortar retailers like ShopRite and Pick and Pay have grown their delivery home services. Fast food delivery giants Uber Eats and Mr. Delivery are expanding to other areas as the demand grows. And Takealot, the country's biggest e-retailer, recently reported increased sales with overseas competitor Amazon now eyeing the South African market. Now, the townships have irregularly been overlooked by these e-commerce giants, but rural parts of the country, home to roughly a third of all South Africans, are mostly ignored. Now, this system is going to be kicking into high gear. Kulula, but it's spelled K-U-L-O-O-L-A, and they're going to be delivering all over South Africa, including to rural areas, which is very, very clever. So, you know, we often...
Wow.
We talk to people who are very, very smart, and we talk to people who've come up with great ideas, and this is a great idea. I love this. This is really, really clever. I hope that this is a huge success for the person who started it. Very clever move.
It also starting off in rural areas is very good, especially in KZN.
Yeah.
Because they were affected by those floods.
Correct.
And I mean, there's still actually damage. There's still people actually affected by that. And even now.
No, that is correct. Absolutely. All right. Wow. I got to play you an interview. This is, you know, we've had a bit of a theme over the last couple of weeks. We're going to talk to Dr. Brianna Fox, who's written a book called The Descent of a Serial Killer. And it's also a show which you can watch on True Crime. It's a new True Crime series, which we will tell you about in just a second. But I'm going to play this for you so you can get an idea of this amazing show in which Dr. Brianna Fox is the expert. Can you identify a serial killer? I interviewed her a short while ago, and I want you to see this, and then we'll come back with a whole lot more. All of that just after 7 o'clock. But take a listen and take a look at this. If you are watching us live on YouTube, you will see what Dr. Brianna Fox looks like, at least at the beginning of the interview. And if you're listening on podcast or anywhere else, you can also listen a bit later. But take a listen to this. This is pretty cool. Dr. Brianna Fox is a psychological criminologist. She was awarded her doctorate at Cambridge University. She's also a former FBI special agent and is now a professor of criminology in the U.S. at the University of South Tampa in Florida. Dr. Fox uses her specialization in evidence-based profiling to work alongside many police departments, advising them how to identify offenders and prevent crime in their communities. Dr. Fox, it's a great pleasure to have you on the show this morning. Thank you so much for being available to talk to us.
Absolutely. And sorry, I'm outside. I was meant to be at Trinity College. I was looking so forward to it. But I apologize. But it's great to be here. I cannot wait to talk to you.
Not at all. I'm thrilled to talk to you. I'll tell you what, we can probably turn off the video just so that we don't have any interruptions. There's so much I want to ask you. I'd like to begin because obviously for many of us, our first interaction with you will be CBS Justice, which is on DSTV here in South Africa, channel 170. And there's a channel premiere of the True Crime original, which is called Descent of a Serial Killer. Season 1. Now, we're all looking forward to this. I think you feature very prominently in this show, and you are the one who takes a look at the serial killer and their path from childhood or early teens. Now, I've heard a lot about what makes people into serial killers, but perhaps with all your experience, you've been able to distill that into a certain number of red flags and components that make someone so crazy that they could do some of the things that we even read about in the news just the other day at the school shooting in Uvalde in Texas. I mean, I'm always concerned, I think all of us are, that there may be a serial killer living next door. How rare is this and what should we look out for?
Yes. Well, the good news is that it is exceedingly rare. This is not something that we need to be kept up at night about, especially since the advent of DNA technology, the ability to even get away with murder so often that you have a serial killer on the loose is extremely rare. That being said, I literally had a serial killer in my neighborhood. So it is something that still happens today. And, you know, even when it happened in my neighborhood, it was somebody that surprised me. So there's not one type. And unfortunately, they even can be our neighbors and they're very difficult to spot.
So how do you spot them? I mean, this is your whole life's work, and it's an incredible amount of work, and it's obviously a discipline which very few people in the world have been exposed to at the levels that you have. Is there a short circuit way to figure out whether someone's a serial killer or not, or does it require enormous amounts of evidence and effort and work and profiling and sometimes even observation?
Right. Well, the answer is unfortunately not. There's so many different pathways, trajectories into serial offending. And while we think, oh, they should be so easy to spot these, you know, horrible people that are hiding in the bushes and jump out at us, the reality in my interviews and research show that's not the case. A lot of them are so successful at, you know, being evil because they blend into society so well.
Wow. It's terrifying. Now, I know in South Africa, as in the world, I mean, people just love these true crime shows. You went into it as a career and have become a specialist at it. What do you think it is that draws people to this stuff?
Well, at least for me, part of what drew me into it was understanding almost the most unthinkable and outrageous and extreme versions of human behavior. There's one thing, trying to understand why somebody would, you know, act a certain way, you know, pick a certain lifestyle, but imagine opting to murder multiple people. It is the most extreme version of human behavior and psychology. And so for me, trying to understand that was the draw. And as I'm sure it is for many people.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's terrifying, but at the same time, it's fascinating. And I think many of us think that maybe if we'd been in the position that you're in so many of these cases where you're close to the evidence, you're able to watch the thing, I suppose we all would feel, you know, that we might have been able to do something sooner. Do you often get that feeling after you've done an important case and when you've investigated some of these cases that you have throughout your career? Do you sometimes get the feeling that if you had been on the scene, you might have been able to do more? Even before that, you might have been able to spot the telltale signs and you could have stopped some of these killings.
I'd love to think that, but at the same time, it's almost like knowing the way that the puzzle pieces fit together once the puzzle is complete. It's a lot harder. And what we're trying to do in the show is show all the puzzle pieces and trying to put together these patterns. But I don't want to undermine how incredibly difficult it is to put these pieces together before you know that someone's going to be a serial killer.
So Dr. Fox, I've heard stories about how if someone is mean to animals when they're little, or if they have a nasty streak with their siblings or any of that stuff, that that's usually a sign that there could be the potential for them to develop into some kind of antisocial, maybe not a killer, but certainly someone who's slightly psychopathic or sociopathic. Do you give any credence to that stuff? Or do you think that that's just an urban legend, old wives' tale, short circuit by people who are trying to figure things out that are beyond them?
It's a little bit of both. The research shows that the McDonald triad, as it's called, doesn't really play out. There are plenty of people that show a lot of those same symptoms, and they'll never go on to become serial killers. But are they potentially, you know, facing some difficulties in their early childhood that maybe are worth intervention? Maybe they will never become a serial killer, but maybe they'll struggle in life or have mental health issues or have a difficulty in their relationship. I think those are all maybe, you know, things that we need to pay attention to as well. So I'm a big proponent of prevention and early intervention. Why wait to see how bad it's going to get and then just arrest the person or, you know, respond to the problem? Better to intervene, prevent problems from happening, and, you know, then we don't have to wait and see what happens.
So, I mean, you're telling me that there aren't any immediate signs that you could pick up on, but surely there are things. I mean, we have this red flag legislation that they're trying to pass in the US at the moment that tries to identify these people who are compromised or psychopathic or have social problems, psychological problems. Are there places in the world where we can tell somebody? You know, they said say something, see something, say something is part of what our role in society is. I mean, if we happen to spot someone who's behaving a bit strangely, what kind of behavior should you worry about? And what kind of behavior should you just dismiss as someone being eccentric or bizarre?
So that's the thing with see something, say something. We can see things such as articulating a plan, somebody saying that they want to hurt somebody else, somebody fantasizing about hurting somebody else, somebody that is clearly experiencing, you know, some type of extreme acute trauma in their life. These are all things that we can say something about, but does it mean that they are going to become a serial killer? Or does it mean that they're experiencing stress and strain in their life that probably deserves intervention either way? I would err on the side of report it, tell authorities, we can get that person services that they need. Even if they're not going to become a serial killer, that person still needs help.
So what role does morality play in all of this? You know, we know that certain people, even if they are perhaps prone to these kinds of behaviors, can be rectified by society if they're raised in certain conditions with good norms and values. What do you feel morality, if it has any role at all, what role do you think morality has to play in this?
There's actually a lot of interesting research on morality, and the problem is that it's really nature and nurture, so there's no one thing that's going to override. You can have a very bad childhood and have great parents and still end up in a very successful life.
Whew, you're not making me feel any better here, Doc. This is scary.
Yeah, unfortunately, the topic area, I think, lends itself to that. But the good news is that there's always hope, and we can prevent a lot of these horrific crimes, as I've always advocated for. There's no one cause of serial killing. We certainly see, you know, red flags, but the reason why I'm not saying there's one cause of serial killing is because they're all opportunities for intervention, and we start seeing them more as that. Will be better suited to actually prevent things, whether or not it's serial killing or some other negative outcome.
Well, I'm thrilled we got to speak to you. I know that you're a very busy person and you've got a lot to do. You're lecturing, you're helping solve all kinds of complicated cases, and you've had an incredible and illustrious career up to now. So it's great to be able to speak to you. And I've got to remind people that episodes 1 to 5 of the show air on Sunday the 3rd until Sunday the 31st. Of July, so that's next month, at 8 o'clock in the evening. So that's Sunday the 3rd to Sunday the 31st of July, 8 o'clock. It's called Descent of a Serial Killer on CBS Justice, which is DSTV channel 170. And one of the stars of that show, Dr. Brianna Fox, who we've just been speaking to. Doctor, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, Gareth.
Great pleasure to speak to you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well,
that is Dr. Brianna Fox, Descent of a Serial Killer. It sounds like something we should all be watching. I'm really perturbed by the fact that she said there's no real way you can spot these people until sometimes it's too late. But we got to keep hoping that they'll find those red flags. And if you see anybody who's behaving strangely, I suppose you got to try and find someone who knows these things. Unfortunately for us, there are too few Brianna Foxes in the world and too many serial killers. CliffCentral.com